In 2021, Swedish scholar activist Andreas Malm published How to Blow Up a Pipeline, a book that is not an instruction manual and does not actually call for blowing up pipelines, but does argue for greater militancy in the climate movement, chiefly in the form of blockades, occupations, climate camps, similar mass direct action. In 2022, director Daniel Goldhaber, screenwriters Ariella Barrère and Jordan Scholl, and editor Daniel Garber released a film loosely inspired by Malm's book. It takes the provocative title, the general idea that causing property damage is morally justified in the fight against climate change, and not much else. It's a fictional thriller using the genre of the heist film, showing a ragtag group of outsiders coming together to pull off one big action.
So, Fran, it's been common to say that the book was better than the movie, but what does this movie even have to do with Andreas Malm's book beyond its incendiary title?
It's a very different work. It's fictional, it's a drama narrative. The book is a nonfiction manifesto or polemic. It's not a narrative. And the filmmakers stress that they wanted to make a mainstream genre film that would reach a wider audience than the book had. And the book starts from pointing out that since the Congress of Parties first meeting in 1995, the climate situation has only gotten worse. So clearly, the waves of mass climate action and activism has not slowed the pace of the disaster. So something else is needed, is sort of the premise that he starts from. And that idea is similar in the film. Something else is needed. The book has three chapters. The first one takes apart the argument for strategic pacifism that has been popular, particularly with the UK XR movement. And Malm really dismantles the arguments for that, saying that it's not clear that nonviolent action is always more effective. In the second chapter, then he goes on to argue for a kind of radical flank movement. The most famous example of that historically is in the US, the civil rights movement. So Malm sort of argues for the need for a radical flank to push a movement left and to get something done, that the peaceful sort of mainstream of progressive climate activism has not had much positive effect in the big picture. And then he has a last chapter arguing against climate despair and for the need to keep acting in the face of the onrushing disaster. The film is really trying to make a left of mainstream film, but mainstream enough to reach a wide audience. So they've chosen a heist film, which is a kind of ensemble piece. So they've got a group of characters selected as sort of representatives of people who are particularly harmed by the fossil fuel industry and the climate crisis. It's an illustration of why some people might want to blow up a pipeline.
Yeah, each character in the film has a backstory, though, one of the things that's kind of compelling about it as a heist film is that it starts just in the action, in the actual deployment of their bomb building, and the kind of backstory for each character, which is significant, comes in as flashbacks throughout the process of them going out to this site on what was one of the characters' land before a fossil fuel company through eminent domain had taken it from him in order to expand their pipeline. We have a couple different college students who are trying to take action around climate change. They're involved in a campus divestment movement, but then also trying to produce awareness-raising film about those who are impacted by fossil fuels, including the character whose land we go out to in the film. And each character has something to say about the background idea of there being a movement for changing the world for a better place, especially in regards to climate change. And what I think is interesting, but also a little underwhelming about this, is that their characterization of the movement focuses on eco-liberal tactics and strategies that look to existing channels for social change, that stress the incrementalism of social change, that stress the market as a mediator for social action. But ultimately, they are also trying to affect the market by blowing up this pipeline. And there isn't a whole lot of connection to movements beyond how they have cynically turned away from what they feel are ineffective movements.
Yeah, we see some of the characters engaging in low-level sabotage. There's a tire slashing. There are other characters who we see pouring sugar into a gas tank for some equipment. Those are the anarchist or whatever punks from Portland. And then there's a Native American character who's furious at the fossil fuel workers on his people's traditional land. Although the only action we see from his community is his mother is involved in some seed saving project.
The Conservancy.
So we see some efforts in the direction of climate action, but we don't see mass movements. We don't see the Standing Rock occupation. We don't see blockades or any of those actions. We also don't see the characters considering the role of the legal system. The director has said in interviews he's in favor of the importance of the necessity defense for climate action, that it is morally justified and legally justified. And we have seen some success of the necessity defense, for instance, in Portland, where activists planted a garden blocking the trains that Zenith is using to bring in tar sands oil. Their case ended in essentially a hung jury, but most of the jurors were in favor of acquitting them. And the argument for the necessity defense is partly that it gets the word out, that it shifts the legal ground available. But there's nothing in the film about, like, nobody seems to have contacted a lawyer. There's very little attention to the larger legal or collective actions that people have taken, might be taking in relation to climate.
The film is trying to make a case for eco-terrorism, and it is somewhat successful in that it portrays everything as going mostly as planned. They, spoiler alert, they don't just show you how to blow up a pipeline, they do it. And they, have several conversations while they're doing this about how they're going to be labeled as terrorists. And in fact, the couple, Logan and Rowan, Rowan is caught when they are trying to sabotage that equipment, and she is basically coerced by the FBI into becoming an informant. And this is one of the less believable, it's less believable that they will trick the FBI, which is what she sets out to do. And then they get involved in this plot by just happening to run into one of the other characters in a bookstore. And, when they're talking about terrorism, they're also making valid points about how when people challenge authority, they get labeled with terrorism. I mean, we had a local experience with this just last month when Portland Association of Teachers, in addition to their rallies in the center of town, had peaceful rallies and pickets in the neighborhoods of some of PPS's management, which the lawyers for PPS challenged this in court by saying that it violated labor law and constituted terrorism. That is like actually in their court filings that this was a terrorist act. So it is worth thinking about how they are trying to face down that fear of doing the right thing is going to get labeled as, the worst kind of evil. And at the same time, they're slipping between the idea of the radical flank as an expression of a larger movement that has other means of power available to it, and somehow leading the movement, being a game changer, as one of the characters refers to the idea of blowing up the pipeline, or revolutionaries. There's this kind of sense of nothing else is going to work, and so we're going to be the spearhead for what will work. And that's just not how it works.
This is definitely not something anyone should take as a guide to how to go about blowing up a pipeline. I mean, I think in the book, the title is maybe an attempt at a kind of rhetorical radical flank. You open it thinking, oh, this is about blowing up pipelines. And then the argument is not that we should be blowing up pipelines, but that we should be engaging in blockades and occupations and mass actions of less incendiary sorts. So I think the book might be using that kind of tactic to move people. The film is not doing the same kinds of thing because it's showing this action of blowing up a pipeline as though it can work this easily. And these people have not taken any consideration to security culture. They're randomly hooking up with other people they meet through videos and in bookstores and not checking, like, who do you know and how do I know that you're not an informant or a plant or an agent trying to entrap us? Because there is a lot of that out there. And there are all sorts of laws being put on the books about damage to critical infrastructure. that heightens the danger of all of these things. So we're not getting any guidance on security culture. I mean, the FBI shenanigans reminded me of the 1973 movie The Sting, which is a light comedy in which there is a similar kind of we tricked the FBI moment in the narrative. And in that, it's light, it's funny, it's not meant to be taken too seriously. But here it seems like there is perhaps some reason that someone might think you could get away with doing this, and the FBI would not swoop in, arrest everybody before anything got blown up, and lock them away for a really long time.
There's a long history, oh, a century at least, of the bomb-throwing anarchist as this boogeyman of the left. And there is also a real history of anarchists wanting to engage in what was called propaganda of the deed, which in fact involved blowing things up or otherwise trying to cause significant damage that would be a spectacle. That would somehow be an inspiration to the masses to wake up. And what we also see, though, in the history of sabotage, which is a word that has a very kind of specific origin in the labor movement, the sabot was the wooden shoe of the Dutch workmen that was apocryphally thrown into the gears as an act of resistance to capitalist modernity. And in the early days of the industrial workers of the world, there was an open embrace of the term sabotage. But in practice, Marxist historian who passed away a couple years ago, Mike Davis, did an incredible historical investigation of the early IWW's praxis around sabotage and shows that rather than being overly focused and single-minded about property destruction as the linchpin of catalyzing revolutionary agency, sabotage was a flexible toolkit of tactics that involved direct engagement with the means of production and the obstruction of that. But it was much more about having the mass capacities of labor at the means of production in control of itself in a way that brought things to a halt. Of course, there were union workers who bombed railroads, but the clandestine organizing that the IWW was doing to withhold their labor in strategic ways that were not a spectacle, like the big strikes of the 1930s, and that would become the kind of only weapon that labor was allowed to deploy occasionally after the National Labor Relations Act was passed. That there's a parallel to this history of repressing the real power of mass politics and of the revolutionary agency of the working class, realizing that nothing happens without us and we have the power. And so there is something, potentially regressive or reactionary in the film that cynically turns away from that tradition and from that analysis of how power works, that Malm's book, does not make that mistake. It starts with a provocation, but then it's really an entry point into, rather than how do we literally blow up a pipeline, how do we figuratively blow up the pipelines with different kinds of mass actions that put their hands on the means of production.
On the plus side, the film, it's a provocation, it's a discussion prompt. So in that sense, it can be a useful tool as well as an entertaining heist film.
To the filmmaker's credit, they do explicitly direct viewers to their website in order to gain access to the book. And in that way, it can be seen as playing with this idea of the radical flank and working with the realities of mass media and how you get a different kind of audience to check something out that will actually make sense to them if you know how to lead them to it. The film's characters have a lot to say about the weaknesses of the climate movement, and the film itself, I think, gives us an opportunity to think through the weaknesses of a particular kind of pivot away from those politics as normal, those existing channels, sorts of means of social change. I think that the takeaway, or one of the takeaways from this film, especially seen in light of the book that it's loosely based off of, is that this kind of dramatic action may be justified, but it is not the leading edge of social change. It is something that has to be in a practical relationship with movements that then deploy those tactics strategically. We need to build the base for power so that if we get to the point where dramatic action is taken, that it doesn't just evaporate after the action. Well, I'm Joe Clement. I've been talking with Fran Michel for the Olmo Variety Hour about the 2022 climate action heist, How to Blow Up a Pipeline. You can find this film on Hulu or for free at your local library on DVD or streaming through the Canopy service. Now, you can get a copy of Andreas Malm's book at the local library or for free as an ebook through the publisher Verso using the code PIPELINE, which you can find through the film's website. Look for links to all of these when the show is posted.
With a turn of the wrench and a twist of the screw, what was once put together, we can easily undo. With bandanas on their faces, careful not to make a sound. They loosened all the bolts that held the towers to the ground. And several weeks later, with nobody around, the Minnesota wind blew tower after tower after tower downwind. Of the screw, what was once put together.